Buono sani tajep, lilek semmiħ ta' Campus FM, lilek semmiħ ta' aħna għawn. Dan huwa Evan Borċ u programm ieħor aħna għawn fejn ta' kull nhar ta' ħamis qegħdin ninaqdu hawnhekk għal sija diskussjoni ma' diversi mistietna, opinjonisti u esperti. Bosta oqsma fil-soċjetà Maltija, volontira, professjonisti, akademiċi u individwi li jaħdmu ta' kuljum fuq diversi elementi u setturi fis-soċjetà Maltija. Is-soċjetà Maltija, soċjetà diversa, soċjetà sinjura u soċjetà li issostni ħafna wkoll il-ħidma li ssir ta' kuljum xi kultant anke f'bibien magħluqa. U dawn il-programmi li qegħdin jixxandru bħallumek kull nhar ta' ħamis għandhom għan wieħed. Lan tal-edukazzjoni u lan li nsawru iktar informazzjoni u diskussjoni dwar il-suġġett partikolari tal-ġimgħa. U din il-ġimgħa miegħi għandi żewġ mistiedna, żewġ ħbieb ġodda qed magħhom ftit minuti ilu, però konna qed nikkomunikaw ukoll biex nagħmlu din id-diskussjoni kemm jista' jkun informattiva u wkoll waħda li ħorġu minn hawnhekk naħseb jiena kif dejjem ngħid b'iktar mistoqsijiet. U għandi miegħi il-Theodore Lerich. Scusa, I already apologized before if I'm going to this early, it's the communications associate and Sara Farrugia, durability solutions associate, which are fancy names. I'm going to ask you to explain them because it's something which I'm still learning, but at the end of the day you're here to also you're representing, and your work is on behalf of the UN refugee agency. UNHCR is that the correct pronunciation of the...
It's UNHCR, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees.
Ah, okay, there you go. That explains the age then.
Yes.
There you go. High Commissioner for Refugees. At the end of the day, so what we're saying is, firstly, is can you kind of briefly explain your role? Because I'm very curious about the communications. I think it's the one which I can understand.
More or less.
Yes, yes.
Longer lines. But I'm the communications and what is called within UNHCR. The PI, so Public Information Associate. It's fairly similar to any communications role in a government agency or even within certain corporate settings. Essentially, I'm running the unit that takes care of all the external information as well as internal information collation and collecting pertaining to UNHCR in Malta. So this means dealing with the media, issuing press releases, taking care of certain internal and external reporting for both our partners and stakeholders, so taking care even of our social media and things like that. So yes, it's as you said, it's more or less, perhaps it's easier to understand than prima facie than Sarah's role.
Sarah, we're putting you a little bit in the deep end, yeah.
So from my end, durable solutions is long-term solutions for refugees. That's what we mean by it, UNHCR. In terms of durable solutions, there are three long-term solutions, which are integration, relocation, or resettlement.
Okay.
In the past, in Malta, we used to have a resettlement program to America. However, this has stopped. And so the only long-term solution, durable solution in Malta, which we focus on, is integration of refugees in their host communities. So this, from a practical point of view, as it means a number of things. So access to rights, provision of information, but most of the time we act as an intermediary between the community, so persons of concern, which are refugees, asylum seekers in Malta, and anyone else, so the government, NGOs, local stakeholders. We often act as an intermediary between the two.
We're going to also explain a little bit about these services. Very kind of you also to explain the role. But now that you're explaining, it's like, that makes sense. There is a process behind it, and we're going to go through the process in the remit of this discussion. But at the essence, at the core, what is the end goal of this agency?
So UNHCR was set up in 1950, and we celebrated our 70th anniversary just last year, in fact. After the fallout of the Second World War, and it was set up to safeguard the lives of the refugees after the Second World War in Europe, and it has since obviously expanded its remit substantially. It won the Nobel Prize in 1954, the Nobel Peace Prize. After that, it has taken on the responsibility to help with various refugee crises that have cropped up ever since. Most recently, after the Second World War, there was the Hungarian Revolution with 200,000 refugees fleeing Hungary to Austria. But then in the 60s, after the decolonization of Africa, especially, as you can imagine, and even in the 80s with people being uprooted from Asia and Latin America, UNHCR has been at the forefront of ensuring that that refugees and asylum seekers get protection. And UNHCR is now active in 132 different countries and has almost 18,000 personnel at its disposal.
So there's 132. So it's a word. It's honestly a worldwide. Yes. Is the pure definition of a worldwide organization.
Yes.
And through that purpose, can we also delve a little bit more into the aims of the agency in Malta? Because at the end of the day, there is an office here in Malta, which has quite a lot of work to do, so to say.
Yeah, exactly, and it's worth noting that, of course, being a global organization means that each UNHCR country, UNHCR, of course, is bound by key principles. The chief document here, of course, being the 1951 Refugee Convention.
So that is like the core.
Yeah, the principle that defines principles of UNHCR. But of course, then each country office has to be flexible and adapt to the realities of the individual country. The Malta office was opened in 2005, and its first challenge was to address the sea arrivals, the increasing sea arrivals from the Libyan coast, with refugees and asylum seekers who are heading towards the European mainland. As such, UNHCR in Malta works very closely with government, with stakeholders, and a number of organizations and NGOs locally. To, like Sarah said, to find the durable solutions for refugees, as well as, you know, the more immediate, taking care of more immediate protection concerns.
We mentioned the core principle is the core document is what it is, but there is some adoption to the country. What is particularly in Malta? We mentioned the need for this office in 2005. Does that change from time to time, the dynamic, the scenario of Malta? Is that something that changes?
So, to continue where Theo left off, the mandate of UNHCR is the same.
Okay.
However, then, in every country, however, it is applied differently. So, in Malta's case, seeing that we are a democratic country, it is the government who has the lead. So, it is the government's responsibility to implement the convention and to ensure that refugees and asylum seekers have a better protection environment. And that is as such what we focus on. But when we say protection, we mean safety. So as maybe we'll explain later on, an asylum seeker applies to a state for protection, and it's for safety, and that they're awarded those specific rights. So our role in Malta is mostly to assist the government, so they have the lead when it comes to processing asylum claims or as responsibility of the open centers. It is the government who leads, and we as UNHCR, and obviously with the support of other NGOs, we try our best to assist. And we do this in a number of ways. So Theo and I, we form part of the PI and Durable Solutions office, but as an office, you also have a third department,
okay,
which is the Protection Unit. And the Protection Unit focuses more making sure that the government adheres to the standards of the open centers, for example, reception conditions. As Theo pointed out, in the last years there have been the boat arrivals as well. So we don't have a disciplinary role, but that as much as possible the government adheres to its obligations, and that there is a better protection environment for refugees and asylum seekers.
We will go into the asylum seeking process because it's also a very interesting thing to learn and to know, but we use the word refugee quite heavily. Who is a refugee? Like is there criteria? Like what's up?
So essentially refugees are people who have fled war, violence, conflict, or persecution, and have crossed an international border to find safety in another country. That is as clear a definition of a refugee as you can find. However, we mentioned the Refugee Convention earlier, UNHCR adheres to the very specific definition that you will find in the Refugee Convention, which defines a refugee as someone who is unable or unwilling to return to their country of origin owing to a well-founded fear of being persecuted for reasons of race, religion, nationality, or membership to a particular social group or political opinion.
Okay.
And
there's a lot into that.
It's at the end of the day that there is kind of a legal component to it, so that's why we need to be specific. But it's important to note, like for the Maltese context, though, especially because maybe there is a particular perception of it, that a refugee may not necessarily arrive by boat, for example, because we tend to see refugees as, for example, or even through any other irregular means. I mean, refugees could also arrive to Malta regularly, but then realize they would need protection. Such as, for example, they would arrive to Malta, you know, normally on a flight, for example, but then a war would break out in their country and it would not be safe for them to return. Uh-huh. Or, for example, even like an LGBTIQ person could arrive to Malta, and then because of a political change in their home country, it would not be safe for them to return. And then they will be able to apply for refugee status to refugee status in Malta.
Yeah.
It's always important to know that nobody chooses to be a refugee.
Yeah.
And they are always forced, refugees are forced to flee from their home country. That anybody potentially could be a refugee.
Thank you for mentioning that. Well, I think that's one of the things that's always running around.
Mm-hmm.
No, exactly. That's very important.
Yeah.
Anyone can be a refugee. So even me as Sarah, for example, I'm critical of the government, for example, I'm being persecuted. I can buy a plane ticket, go to Italy and apply for asylum. It's a human right.
So okay, so the seeking of it is a human right.
Exactly. Anyone can apply for asylum.
And what is asylum? So first you are, correct me if I'm wrong, so first I apply for refugee status, then I apply for asylum, or like what's the whole process of like what's the difference between a refugee and an asylum seeker?
Yeah. Okay, so an asylum seeker is essentially the first step of the process. So let's use the same example. I'm being persecuted in my country. I flee, whether it is in a regular or irregular way. So, for example, if it's by boat or if it's by plane. And then I apply for asylum. By asylum, we mean protection, really. I am asking the government of a country to protect me because I have a well-founded fear of being persecuted and I cannot return to my own country. So the asylum seeker part, it's the first stage. So when you express the intention of applying for asylum, at that point in time, you're considered an asylum seeker. But then, not all asylum seekers are considered refugees.
Okay.
Because there's a process in place. Like if we take Malta, for example, it's the government who assesses the person's claim.
As we said, it takes the lead in Malta. So,
But the process in itself, there are interviews involved. So basically what the government does is, it makes sure that what I am saying is true and that my reason for fleeing merits merits me being awarded the status of a refugee. So, for example, if I am fleeing my country for reasons of poverty, in that case, it's very unlikely, let's say, that I'll be awarded with refugee status, because poverty is not one of the reasons that make a refugee.
Okay.
If I am being personally persecuted for, I don't know, membership of social group, political opinion, grounds of sexuality, in that case, yes, I'm being persecuted, so the government will assess my claim and then decide whether to award me with refugee status or other type of protection.
I would like to also kind of go into a little bit more detail. At the beginning, you also explained that your role is integration, relocation, and settlement. Or am I incorrect?
Partially incorrect.
Partially incorrect. Can you explain a little bit more?
So what I meant was by durable solutions, that term we use within UNHCR. Durable solutions is the same as long-term solutions.
Okay.
And in terms of long-term solutions, there are three, which is relocation, resettlement, and integration. However, in Malta, we only focus on one,
Exactly.
which is integration.
In general, though, like Malta, not what do they mean? Like in general, of course, different countries have different priorities. Mm-hmm. But in general, what does it mean? For example, integration. Let's start from that. What do we mean by integration? We mean like that a person is connected back into society. No, is that the main?
Exactly. So in Malta's case, it's mainly integration into the host community. So that is the Maltese community. But then it can mean a number of things. So most things we take for granted are the way we integrate into society. So it can be access to rights, for example, healthcare, or access to employment, or social security, or education. That's one aspect of integration. But then there is also, on a more grassroots level, integrating within your community. So, as Theo mentioned earlier, we work very well with government, other stakeholders in employment, education, but then we also try work with local NGOs or, for example, local councils as well.
Okay.
So that on a day-to-day basis facilitates the relationship and facilitates the way refugees can integrate within their communities.
And that's what, that's the office in Malta that focuses on. But then, as I'm understanding, then there's relocation and settlement in Malta that we're not focused on that, but there's different countries, of course, that relocate. And what's the difference between relocation is different and settlement is someone to, wouldn't be settlement an integration, part of integration, or is that complex?
Resettlement, in Malta's case, there was an active program up till a few years ago. So basically it is when the refugee asylum seeker applies for protection in Malta, but then through the resettlement program is resettled in another country. So
okay.
In the past there was resettlement program to America.
All right.
However, with the Trump administration, this program was stopped.
All right.
And the scope of the program was actually to assist countries who are struggling. And in Malta's case, we are no longer as seen as a country who needs so much assistance with refugees and asylum seekers, because the conditions are good over here. They're able to integrate.
It's very interesting, however, integration, the element of integration. And I say this is because I'm personally a huge believer of integration. I mean, at the end of the day, I feel that everyone can learn and everyone can connect with each other, and we have the responsibility for that. And maybe we can go a little bit more deeper also on what kind of programs there is available for individuals to support. Like I feel that as the citizen, as a Maltese citizen, we also have a role to play in that. However, before we do that, I would like to also maybe focus a little bit also on there is a lot when it comes to refugees and asylum seekers, and there's a lot of misinformation, and I would like to thank you also for teaching us what does that mean. I looked into the website and there was this key word, statelessness, and I was very curious also on what does that mean. Can we maybe elaborate a little bit on that?
So statelessness is it occurs when basically the person ends up or is born without a nationality, And obviously that is troublesome, because if no state takes responsibility for that person has no rights. In Malta, we have not yet signed the Statelessness Convention, and as far as I know, there are few cases which sometimes may arise either because a child is born and that country does not acknowledge the marriage, things like that. But it is not that much of a regular occurrence in Malta.
All right. But it's good to also know that, the term, because I think sometimes, and I personally say this from my experience also when researching, there's so many information out there that, you need to clarify, and you need to make sure that we are having the same conversation without a lot of misinformation going around. And this actually is one of the questions which I remember. I was 100% sure that it's going to be a good question, and then we're like, listen, it has nothing to do with it. And it's about, I was quite surprised with the number of emergency calls that there is in light of the UNHCR in general. Really, I'm saying the global high commission that works. Maybe on the media we pick up on Afghanistan, and then there's a media cycle, and then it dies down, and the crisis is still there, and it's still a humanitarian crisis, but at the end of the day, it's considered that the media has moved on, but that's a whole other conversation. How does UNHCR Malta support individuals when they are in the country, so when they are in Malta, such emergency calls do happen?
Well, like Sarah was mentioning, there are the processes that we operate under kick in a sense. Of course, as we said, the government takes the lead on a lot of the immediate concerns, but we are there to both monitor and consult and guide the government towards adhering to and respecting its international obligations in this regard. That includes, you mentioned Afghanistan, that's something that is still very much in flux, and so for that reason, for example, even within the PI unit, we have meetings every week with our international colleagues where we keep each other updated. Okay, so what is happening, what should we say, what shouldn't we say, not in the sense of keeping it secret, but in terms of, because you have to remember that UNHCR, unlike perhaps an NGO, which we work with and we kind of rely on them to provide, to play that role, is we have a diplomatic mandate as well, in the sense, because we work very closely with government, and even if we may not, always see eye to eye on every single issue, we try to find a compromise and a way to work that at the end of the day benefits the refugee and the asylum seeker. That is our main priority. So all of our conversations with government, all of our discussions and our plans have that in mind at all times. I don't know if Sarah wants to add anything to that.
So our role is very much advocacy based in Malta. And then, so in terms of services, we do not provide a direct services. We do this through our partners, which are Integra, GRS, and Aditus. They provide legal and psychosocial services. However, when it comes to providing actual assistance, so maybe this is a bit more relevant pre-COVID, we used to attend the open centers quite regularly, so and provide information about how the asylum system works, because keep in mind that most of the time when people come to Malta, their knowledge of the asylum system is very limited. So making sure that the person knows and understands what is going on is very important to them. So it's mostly information provision and also advocacy with stakeholders who are important to refugees and asylum seekers. But going back to integration, so we always say that integration is a two-way process. We work with stakeholders from the government side, etc., but then we also work with the refugees and asylum seekers themselves. And something that's quite interesting within the Malta office is that we work very closely with persons of concern. So this is either to face-to-face contact with refugees and asylum seekers in the open centers, or else with people who are residing in the community. In Malta, there are a number of refugee-led organizations who are organized, and they themselves act as leaders to their own communities. So what we do as an office, we try our best to provide them with information and introduce them to stakeholders so that they can then pass on the information to their members. We also invest a lot in capacity building so that they can organize themselves better to be better leaders, essentially.
This is interesting. So basically, if I had to put it like this, really, I'm part of an LGBT organization, right? If I had to reach out to UNHCR and say, listen, we have very limited capacity building information on how the process works. I can reach out and be like, let's see what your needs are. Let's see, maybe you can help me connect with this. I know Aditus is, we talk with Neil on a weekly basis, but you know, there's that cause of facilitation of information where NGOs, because, and I'm also mentioning this because again, I believe that we all have a role to play, and there is then that kind of element of connecting individuals together and kind of pooling on that information. Thanks for that also explanation, because then it also leads me to the Maltese society as a whole. And you know, we are such a beautiful country, we are such a diverse country, and there's I think the elements that make Malta radiate all the time. But do you still find that there are like racist elements within Maltese society? Is that like, Dion, putting it on your side.
Yeah, the fact is that as Sarah mentioned, we work very closely with various refugee-led organizations, and that entails obviously connecting them to aspects of Maltese society directly, or helping them to achieve that level of connection that they need. And we have to say that we found a lot of support from Maltese people, Maltese individuals, and other, both on individual level and on a sort of organizational level. Certain perceptions will always be there, but again, that is part of our day-to-day work. The protection unit, of course, has its immediate kind of priorities. But then when after that process is sort of completed, or at least kind of, after it goes through that initial phase, then it falls down to durable solutions and, in fact, our unit, PI, to kind of help as much as possible see how we can improve that perception on a long-term basis. And so, for example, I mean, I can give you a very practical example of a recent campaign. Well, it's a video, but it was a video we had done in collaboration with Love in Malta, where we got an Eritrean refugee who has been living in Malta for 8 years. We kind of decided to turn the tables on the usual narrative, where you know you get the refugee to speak about their story. We obviously, we introduced his story as well, but we wanted him to interview Maltese people who have worked with refugees in the past. Both like, because of their sort of interests, as an NGO, but also just, simply as individuals who aren't necessarily part of any NGO or any organization, but who have had that experience.
Yeah.
Because we felt it was important to kind of point out that there are Maltese people out there who are interested in improving the lives of refugees and asylum seekers, and in seeing them as somebody that they can collaborate with, not just on a sort of charity model, but just as you know, worthwhile individuals,
yeah,
who contribute and who have equal standing in a way. So that is our priority, is always to break down that barrier, because we tend to kind of sometimes operate on either very problematic elements that you alluded to, but also then on the kind of charity model, which isn't ideal either. So we want to kind of emphasize that these people are fully fledged individuals like everyone else who can contribute in many ways to multi-society.
How was the video received? I haven't seen it, so I need to go. We need to share it on our Facebook page,
sure,
and you know, and then kind of go through it.
It was received very positively. One thing that came out as well is that the person in question, Mibratum, clearly is very well respected by both the host community and his own obviously internal refugee community. So that again points to the fact that it is possible to have these successful integration stories, and we've seen many of them and we keep seeing them. So our job is to really highlight them as much as we can.
That's beautiful. It is beautiful because it is, as you say, it's a success. It is a success story, and I should have asked this this also before, but you know, it's an international team here in Malta. I would assume there's quite a lot in the staff is there's a lot of individuals because it's quite a thing, and that helps. No, having an international team also helps in getting different perspectives in life in general, I would say.
Most UNHCR teams, yeah, I find are quite international because, again, the organization itself doesn't necessarily need to operate on those borders. So
yeah,
people will come in based on their competencies and based on their interests and so on. I don't know if Sarah can comment, because she's been in the organization a bit longer than I
have.
She's seen more of that flow, perhaps.
No, it's true. We're a multicultural team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We work very well with each other, and obviously everyone comes in with their own experiences, with as in their different characters, but
I'm asking because for me it's also very interesting how you know, you're working as an international organization, there's an international team working, and at the end of the day it's in Malta, it's still something which fuels me as well. Okay, so we're going to stop this conversation a little bit, so we'll go to a musical break, and then we'll continue the conversation about intersectionality. Also, I know that there is a biannual magazine which is published, and a number of other interesting questions, which I'm sure will spark more questions for this conversation. So we're going to listen to an international singer who's Maltese, Lauren Aquilina, and her recent public music record, The Knife.
Loyalty has always been a two-player game, yeah, but you play me. Now I can't look at you the same. What an awful shame. Ooh, another one bites the dust. Ooh, somebody that I used to trust. Now there's no more us, and it hurts, yeah, it hurts. But I know what I deserve, so thank you for the knife. A knife in my back, almost took my life. Now it's in my hand.
kienet Lauren Aquilina Denaif iktar mużika minn Malta wara dar program flimkien ma' Tony Sant li ta' kull ġimgħa jippreżentalna mużika minn Malta. U illum waqt li nitkellmu dejjem fuq l-element Malti nitkellmu mal-UNHCR però fl-uffiċċju li jopera f'Malta u fl-ewwel parti tal-programm jew ftit iktar l-ewwel parti tal-programm tkellimna dwar bosta oqsma differenti b'mod partikolari rajna x'inhi differenza bejn refugee u asylum seeker, rajna wkoll l-għan prinċipali tal-UNHCR f'Malta u wkoll l-elementi kollha li għandhom x'jaqsmu ma' dan. U qabel before we went to the conclusion of the first part of this program, we mentioned success stories, which I think is a very heartwarming and one of the positives that is to be promoted. However, one item which is very interesting for me is the basis of intersectionality, which basically what we're saying here that a refugee or as asylum seeker is not only a refugee and an asylum seeker, but there's other identities, part and partial, within it. And we've already talked about the connection of different with different service providers. But I was wondering if there is other projects and initiatives that are available for the different identities of the refugee or asylum seeker to flourish in Malta.
So, as an office, we, as much as possible, try opt for an AGD approach. So, age, gender, and diversity.
Okay.
Now, obviously, this has its challenges. However, when it comes to projects or initiatives or even services, not we per se try offer, as much as possible, try adapt them according to the needs of the person. So when it comes to services, thankfully, most services providers have extended their services to refugees and asylum seekers. So, for example, with Richmond Foundation or MGRM. So it is not an issue of because they are refugee, they need to go somewhere specific because they happen to have a disability, for example. They can make use of the same services. But obviously, because of the fact that they are refugees, it can be a bit more difficult. So as an organization, what isn't, to give you like a practical example, if we're doing an activity with women, we make sure that it is a safe space or that the interpreters are also female or that we provide childcare. However, unfortunately, there are some people who slip through the gaps because it is very difficult to make contact with everyone, especially since the lives of a refugee most of the time it's a bit more challenging because their main concern is to work, make an income, find accommodation, they might have a family to support. So sometimes even though we would try to organize an activity or initiative, it might not be that person's main priority.
Okay.
However, at the same time, we also opt for a participatory approach. So we make sure that everything we plan, as much as possible, again, we get the go-ahead of the refugee communities. So this is done either by organizing focus groups to get feedback from the communities themselves, or else meet the leaders of the refugee communities and, again, ask for their feedback or what they want us to plan. For example, like a few years ago, we wanted to do like a PI campaign. Don't think you were there at the time, Theo. but we still do this, of course. And we got the leaders of the refugee communities together and asked them, so what do you want? And they decided they want to do a radio campaign.
Okay.
And we opt for that approach most of the time. Like, obviously, because of COVID, it has become a bit more challenging. However, we have also, again, adapted our services and our support. So during COVID, we started to translate all the government notices, which was a bit of a challenge because they were changing
languages,
in different languages, of course, because the language is one of the main barriers, one of the main challenges.
That was a challenge because there was like one every day at some point.
Yes, it was quite. It was quite chaotic. We also have a helpline. So there are specific days of the week where a person can call, and there's an interpreter as well. And most of the refugees speaking languages. When it comes to information provision, since we couldn't do outreach ourselves or organize meetups, we created like information videos with some services, like for example, Jobs Plus took part, DIR, the union. So we try as much as possible to include everyone in our work.
I really appreciate the AGD, age, gender diversity, because when we're saying refugee, it's a cap. It's not refugees, like there's different languages, there's different cultures, different norms of life, etc., etc. And so basically what you're doing is that if the denote, the government notice is going to be translated, this could be translated, God knows how many languages, you know, or how many religious subtypes. But, you know, there's a lot of thought into it. And it's good to highlight this because, you know, we always say refugees, it's a cap, and so everyone is the same. But it's not the case. There's different elements within it. And one of the other elements which now makes a lot of sense when it comes to the priority of integration in society is the magazine Building Community. Which the last one was dedicated to Lassana Sisse, and it stems from, now it explains the question, one of the objectives is integration. But what does it mean building communities, or i.e. the magazine? What is the main objective of it?
Well, I hadn't yet joined the organization when the magazines were published, so I can't speak to the actual day-to-day setting of the magazine itself. Yeah. But I can say that, of course, the magazine is, in a sense, a distillation of our work up to that point. A lot of the stories in the magazine, for example, would have appeared online or you know, as part of our ongoing campaigns. And again, we want the magazine to, just like we want all of our PI stories, to reflect our work and to highlight our, not just our work, but the people involved, our interviewees, who will be members of the refugee and asylum seeking community in Malta, who would have an interesting story or who would have an interesting, you know, survival journey to speak about, so that people can get a fuller picture of who these people are and how they form part of Maltese society.
Is it something that you know, is you plan to do it again? Is it something that, you know, because I feel that it's very important to communicate these stories. So it's something which, for me, it's very accessible as well to have.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely on top of our list of priorities as much as possible within all the other work we need to do. Like, I would really love to emphasize that as much as possible. So yes, hopefully we'll have a new one coming out soon.
Yeah, well, yeah. When it does, let me know, because I'd like to give it a read. Yeah. But there is also roundtables that happen from time to time, and the UNHCR Virtual Gender-Based Violence Roundtable is going to be held, and it is supporting lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, and queer persons in forced displacement. Can we talk a little bit about forced displacement? What do we mean? What do you mean by that? I know I'm putting you on the spot on this one, but it's an interesting topic to be discussing.
So forced displacement is when someone is forced to leave their country of origin. So it's like another term for refugee or asylum seeker, really. So this round table is one out of two round tables we organize as an office. And basically, like as explained before, we act as intermediaries most of the time, or facilitators. And one of the round tables is focusing on gender-based violence. It happens twice a year.
All right.
And the scope is to bring a number of service providers or people who have projects going on, share good practices and learn. So even though Malta is quite small, unfortunately, sometimes we just don't work together. So there might be a service which would really help a specific community, for example, and they won't be aware of it. It is like a networking table, but also to, sorry, I should have mentioned, so there are the guests, the participants, and then every round table speakers are invited. So in this case, I think it's Ada Aditus, AWAS, LGBTIQ Gozo. The focus of the specific gender-based violence roundtable is LGBTIQ+. We also have a similar roundtable, which is the integration roundtable.
Okay.
We organize it like once every 3 or 4 months. The concept is more or less the same, but this time focusing more on integration. As in, there are the regular guests, which are mostly NGOs and local stakeholders. And then every round table, we invite speakers to present a new service which might be offered, or else a project which is being implemented. Basically, it is for people to network and be more aware of what is going on in Malta.
And again, that remains the whole, I think, the aim of advocacy and of connecting people and of sharing services, which is very interesting. I think it's also very heartwarming, the diversity of organizations that I know for sure are going to be in the virtual gender-based violence one, because, you know, I saw the agenda and also how many services there are a number of services, which is quite extensive sometimes, but still there is some gaps which we still need to identify, and I think these conversations are very important to have, not to only identify these gaps, but at the end of the day for service providers to collaborate with each other and actually do something about it, because identifying it and just leaving on the paper is only half or like the first step that is to be done. During our musical intervention, when we were listening to the beautiful voice of Lauren Aquilina, I also asked if there's any International Days, which are celebrated, or and World Refugee Day is 20th June. Did I get
that correct? That is one of the many. One of the main ones that are sort of a priority for us. I mean, yes, World Refugee Day is an annual international day that UNHCR observes. It's on June 20th. It's usually when the PI unit is at its busiest, because, as you can imagine, we take on a lot of, it's important for us to note it. So every office will have, we of course have our directives on the theme of that individual year coming in from up top at UNHCR. But then, of course, every country organizes its own initiatives around World Refugee.
What was the 2021 team?
But it was very much together. Together we heal.
Yeah.
We thrive. I think it was. So it was basically around COVID, education, yeah, and sports because of the Olympics.
Okay, there you go. That's very clever.
But it was together. We basically, and so for Malta, we one of the things we did, because then we highlighted, of course, the work of the various refugee-led organizations here, but we also got not just the refugee-led organizations, but also other stakeholders, both our partners and like government agencies and institutions, to kind of pass on a message. A positive message for the refugee community, and to kind of reflect an idea of integration and so on. So we kind of came up with a social media campaign on that basis.
I'm glad that you mentioned sports, because my amazing sports, and I believe that sports is a very good vehicle for integration and also for to elevate social poverty. I really do believe that. So I'm very glad that also the main office, wherever it is in the world, decided in some room or through a Zoom meeting to officiate that. How can one contact or collaborate with HR? Let's say, what's the medium of connection?
Well, all of them, really. We have our website, which is unhcr.org/mt. You can also contact us by email on mtava@unhcr.org. We are also on Facebook and Twitter. when you log on to our website, you will also find the information sheet of our helpline, which refugees and asylum seekers can use to get to ask questions, to get help on whatever they need in various languages.
And it's very, again, this various languages thing is very interesting for me. And I think one of the main elements that I also would like to highlight is the accessibility of information, which, Sarah, you mentioned very well at the beginning. Also, you know, because I have this preconceived idea, which may be incorrect, most probably is incorrect, that not everyone has access to one online platform. And so how to make that information accessible in different languages throughout the different means that is possible, I think it's key, and I'm sure that there is a number of services and conversations. Is there a directory of services that are available? Like, that's something that maybe we can work on. It's an idea, you know, because there's so many services.
That's definitely in progress for us is the help page that we hope to add to our website, which several country offices have implemented.
All right.
We're in the process of implementing it ourselves. It's just a more kind of dynamic and comprehensive way of collating all that information. On our website, you will find a list of all the major refugee-led organizations as well as our partners. So there's very much that in place. But what you said earlier about not everybody having access to online methods of communication, that's where our relationships with refugee-led organizations come in, where we reach out to them directly and tell them, listen, make sure that this information reaches members of your community.
Yeah.
So obviously they will be more in touch with the people on the ground. Obviously this is Sarah's remit, she can tell you more about this, but that's kind of, I think that's the basic principle.
These last few months you've also been using different channels. So we have Facebook, WhatsApp. We used to send out voice messages as well, so translated information via WhatsApp.
It's very clever.
we had to get a bit creative last few months.
I thank you so much for your work. Honestly, it seems that there's way much more we can talk about in reality.
Sure.
But I think it's a very comprehensive idea of UNHCR and also the office here in Malta, and also how it is at the end of the day a global collaboration towards the same achievement, but of course in different roads and different paths that every country needs to take, and depends on the situation. I thank you so much for the sometimes uncelebrated work that you do, and honestly it's been a pleasure to get to know you and get to learn a little bit more, and hopefully in the future, why not? I mean, definitely we're going to collaborate, because we're going to be also present at the roundtable. But let's not stop there. Both as an organization and as a program, this is the platform where if you ever need to promote anything, feel free to reach out. And with that being said, lilkom semijata Campus FM, ringrazzjakom ukoll tal-li kontu magħna. Thanks to Teo, thanks to Sara from UNHCR office here in Malta, u lilkom semija nħeġġixkom biex dan il-programm terġu tisamuħ nar sibt ikun repetut fil-11 ta' filgħodu, u ħeġġu lil dawk kollha li forsi ma semgħux biex kif iduqqu t-tokki tal-11 jitfaħ ukoll fuq 102.7, jew tista' wkoll tagħmlu il-live stream grazzi għall-website tagħna, u jitru wkoll fuq il-paġna tal-Facebook fejn hemmhekk ukoll ħan ixxerjaw l-informazzjoni, ħan nitfgħu l-informazzjoni kollha ta' UNHCR anke jekk intom ukollkom bżon taċċessaw dik l-informazzjoni u tixtiequ tagħmlu daqsxejn riċerka jew daqsxejn homework fil-ħin tagħkom ukoll. Programm ieħor nar il-ħamis li ġej se jkolli mistiedna oħra interessanti ħafna, eksa l-liema tiegħi, u se nkunu qed nitkellmu dwar id-drittijiet tan-nisa għal-ġimgħa d-dieħla saħiet.